Since the ladies have not been in our class, I want to take the time tonight to do one little thing, and that is to set the stage for them to study the book of Revelation on their own based on the premises that we use to do our own study, which is as follows. If you are going to do justice to the study of the book of Revelation, you must keep in mind three basic principles, along with some minor principles, but three basic principles. Number one, the book of Revelation was not written to the Plymouth Church of Christ. It was written to the seven churches of Asia during the first century, specifically during the 90s, probably 95, 96, somewhere right in there. Written to the seven churches of Asia, and those specific, particular letters are found in the book, the first three chapters. Secondly, in the book of Revelation, you're dealing with two kinds of word usages. Image usages. It's called what, Charlie? Or they're called what? Apocalyptic words, language, or visions, or illustrations. What's apocalyptic?
Wild, exaggerated, weird.
You may remember reading in the Old Testament about some of Jeremiah's visions, the wheels up in the air. Perhaps you read about Isaiah's weird way in which God chose him to be a prophet. He sent an angel down to take his thongs and a piece of hot coal from the fire, place it on Isaiah's lips to purify his words. Well, in a sense, that's kind of apocalyptic. Didn't hear that. Oh. Yes, that's Edna. Versus literal. Literal words. They're both used in the book of Revelation. And sometimes it's difficult to distinguish, is John using this in a figurative sense or is he using it in the literal sense? So you have to make that decision as you look at the context. That's the second principle. The third principle is based upon three statements that John makes in the book. Let me just take the time to mention one of them. I don't want to spend a great deal of time on these tonight. But in chapter 1, verse 1, here's what it says. The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show his servants, things which must shortly take place. Now, three times in the book, including that one, John mentions that what is written here is going to take place very quickly, very soon, very shortly. Now, because it's mentioned three times, and because of the context suggesting that it is a literal statement, we assume that according to time, most of the things that, majority of the things that are described in this book took place in and around the first century B.C. Did I say B.C.? A.D. Charlie, you should have caught me on that. Now, if you stay within the parameters of those guidelines, you're going to keep yourself from making foolish statements like some of our religious people have made in the past and are making now. Statements about things that are involving present-day calamities and national leaders and international affairs and wars and so forth, as if John is talking about those things that happen today, and he's not. Now, the book, of course, centers around three kinds of episodes. One is the reading and the breaking of the scrolls. There are seven of them. A scroll is just simply a piece of writing material. It's round, writings on both sides. It's called a scroll, whereas this is a book or a codicil or a codex. That's what the name of this is. It's a book. But originally, they wrote not in book form, but in scroll form. So there are seven scrolls, and they're opened. And John sees visions from them, and he talks about them and describes them. And then you have the seven trumpets. Seven trumpets are blown, and God brings judgment against the Roman Empire, who were the instigators of tremendous amount of persecution against God's people in the first century. And then the third episode involves seven bowls. Yeah, and one of them did that. Seven bowls, like a bowl that you would eat breakfast out of, cereal. Except these bowls contained the fiery judgment of God. And when each bowl was poured out, a certain percentage of things on the earth were destroyed, and judgment was brought upon evil people. In chapters 19 and 20, we have the devil doing battle against God and his forces, and is severely beaten, and he and his henchmen are cast into the bottomless pit that is known for its fire and brimstone. And so at the conclusion of chapter 20, the devil is no more. He's dead. He's deceased. He's gone. And God and God be thanked for it. That brings us to Revelation chapter 21, which we'll be discussing tonight, which you have in front of you at least some notes on chapter 21. And then next Wednesday night we will discuss chapter 22, and then we will put Revelation to bed for rest. We've done enough damage to it for one season. Chapter 21. Chapter 21, as I see it, is a picture of heaven. Now, not everybody sees it as a picture of heaven. Even good Bible scholars, even good ministers of the churches of Christ. But for the most part, scholars, Bible students do see chapter 21 as a description, at least in part, of heaven. And I'll be looking at some reasons with you here as to why that should be. But the book of Revelation is an unusual book in that it introduces to us a number of new things. For example, let's just look at some of these passages. Chapter 2 and verse 17 reads, for example, "And when I saw him, I fell at his feet as dead, and he laid his right hand on me, saying to me," I'm sorry, I was in 117. 217 is what we want. "He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I will give some of the hidden manna to eat, and I will give him a white stone, and on the stone a new name written, which no one knows except him who receives it." So the book of Revelation mentions a new name. And in all probability, that new name is the name Christian. We're not told. We're left to figure it out on our own or make a guess. And a good guess would be Christian. 3:12. He who also overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go out no more, and I will write on him the name of my God, the name of the city of my God, the new Jerusalem which comes down out of heaven from my God, and I will write on him my new name. New name again, but also new Jerusalem. Oh, that sets men's minds really twirling, boy. New Jerusalem. Could it possibly be restored Jerusalem in physical Palestine? I doubt it. But we'll talk a little bit about that tonight, a little later on. Chapter 5 verse 9. What I want next. 5 verse 9. And they sang a new song. Most of the singing that goes on in the book of Revelation is around the throne of God and involves thousands upon thousands, 10,000 upon 10,000, a tremendous multitude of people. Can you imagine hearing that many angels singing? Wow. That would be something, wouldn't it? So you had a new song there. Chapter 14, verse 3. Is another reference to another new thing. 14 verse 3. And they sang a new song before the throne, before the four living creatures and the elders, and no one could learn that song except 144,000 who were redeemed from the earth. Now, you ladies who were not in our class, we answered the question, who are the 144,000. And we ain't going to tell you. You'll have to find out for your own, Louise. I deserve that. Rightly so, I deserve that. Okay. Oh. Oh, but he's wrong. Or she is, whatever it is, whoever it is. Okay, 21 and 2 and 21 and 5, of course, talks about the new city, the new Jerusalem, the new earth. Ah, boy, that sets man's minds really throbbing, you know, trying to find out what that new earth is and so forth. So there's a lot of newness in the book of Revelation. And we crave to know all that is new. Now, the big question, I think, in these last two chapters, chapters 21 and 22, where we are tonight, or where we're beginning to be, is John's efforts to write a little bit about heaven. Now, you see, it's difficult for John or anybody else in the Bible as authors, to write to us about heaven, because heaven is in a different state of affairs than we're in. You see, the state of affairs that we're in right now is physical, earthly. We have pain and suffering and disease and anxiety and grief and troubles and wearisomeness and all sorts of good stuff. Whereas in the afterwhile, on the other side, in heaven, if you please, things are different. Things are going to be different. And we're going to be like him who is Jesus the Christ. We're going to be like him in bodily form. Yes. There will be a body. That's the signature. So, understanding what the new heaven will be and the new earth will be a big goal to achieve in our study of chapters 21 and 22. Now, whether or not we come away with a clear definition of where heaven's going to be and where the new earth is going to be remains to be seen. But one of the most unusual things that you'll find in this chapter is the measurement of the holy city, the New Jerusalem, the heavenly city, or if you please, heaven. And we'll take a look at that in just a moment, as time permits. Now, I want to discuss with you reasons why, when I read chapters 21 and 22, John is discussing and describing heaven. How many times have you been to a funeral service where the minister or someone in the audience read from the 21st chapter of Revelation? It happens almost every time. Reference is made to Revelation chapter 21 at referring to heaven. And yet I've had some good brethren, some scholarly brethren, maybe some in this audience tonight, I don't know, who maintain that that's not a description of heaven. Well, what is it a description of? It's not a description of heaven. Well, it's the opposite of the environment of evil, the environment of discontent, and so forth. But let's look at the reasons why we would want to understand this to be speaking of heaven. Chapter 21 and the first five verses of chapter 22. Now that includes John's description of heaven. Now the very first reason that I put down here is when they go back to chapters 19 and 20, what do we see? Two things. And we've talked about these. We studied these the last 4 weeks. We spent 4 weeks in those two chapters. Some of the brethren thought I was stupid for spending such a long time there, but we got some hard-headed brethren. And yeah, right. I didn't think we'd ever get out of Mark. And they didn't think we'd ever get out of Revelation. But we're going to get out. Here's the point that I want to make. In chapters 19 and 20, which precede chapters 21 and 22, he talks about the judgment, the universal, worldwide judgment, and the defeat of Satan and the devil and his henchmen. So what naturally would flow from that, Charlie? Heaven, the reward of the righteous, the peace and the tranquility of God's people. Naturally, that would flow. So what else could he be describing if it were not that? So we say, well, it's just sensible to think about it that way. Will soon come to pass? Well, there are some things that are extended on. That's obvious here at the end. To wrap things up, I would say, Brother Philip, that it's just the end time. There has to be a stopping place somewhere or an extension of time. Certainly, for people who are still alive, heaven, of course, is not home. We're not there yet. And when we die, we may not be there yet either. There may be a resting place prior to entrance into heaven. But that's another subject at another time. The second reason given here is that the terms used are patterned after what is known about heaven in other biblical references. For example, you turn to John chapter 14, and Jesus is meeting with his disciples, and they raise some questions of concern because he's announced to them that he's going to be crucified and that he's going to die, and that he won't be with them any longer. But in chapter 14, he reassures them that he's going to go to a place to prepare for them, and that he will return and take them with him to this prepared place. He talks about that place a little bit. And then Peter talks about the afterwhile as well. And Paul talks about it in the 15th chapter of 1 Corinthians, the chapter on the resurrection. So, what we know about heaven elsewhere in the Bible corresponds directly to what John is here describing in the 21st chapter of Revelation. Number three. As I see it, simply put, here's what happens. In this life, God comforts us in our sorrows. In the next life, what does he do? He takes the sorrows away. Don't have to fool with him. Well, when you read the previous chapters in the book of Revelation, prior to chapter 21, and then you read chapter 21, what do you see? You see that happening, don't you? The Spirit instructs John to write about persecution and how to deal with it. And then when that's over, lo and behold, in the 21st chapter, he talks about God removing the cause of the sorrow. We don't have to worry about it anymore. Thank God for that. And then number four. Why would we want to think that John is here describing heaven in chapter 21? Because this text is closely associated with Peter's in 2 Peter 3. Let's turn over there. 2 Peter 3. Okay. Let's start with verse 10. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. Well, when you read the book of Revelation prior to chapter 21, that's exactly the picture you get. It's going to all come to a consuming end. Seeing then, verse 11, that all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens, being on fire, will be dissolved, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, listen now, verse 13. This sounds like Revelation, doesn't it? Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. That's heaven. Can't be any other place. That's heaven. Therefore, beloved, seeing that you look for such things, be diligent that you may be found by him in peace, without spot and blameless. And account that the long-suffering of our Lord is salvation, as also our beloved brother Paul, according to the wisdom given to him, has witnessed or has written to you. Well, I see Peter saying about the same thing John has been saying. Yes.
I don't understand why he's talking about
it in
the
earth, because if we're going to heaven, we're not coming back to earth, right?
Well,
that's apocalyptic. It may not mean our earth. It may
not. It may not mean a little earth.
It may mean something else.
One thing to keep in mind here is that heaven and earth are used together. They are connected by a coordinating conjunction, and heaven and earth, earth and heaven. You see, the problem is using terms and ideas and images that are figurative, that are not literal. For example, the 1,000 years. Yes, right. A new location. A new setup. Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Now, the fifth reason given here makes a whole lot of sense to me. And that is that any time you have a book like Revelation written, which is a continuation of a story of happenings and things, you expect a climax at the end. One of the things that I used to hate watching Hitchcock movies or Hitchcock programs was he always left you hanging in the air. Never would bring things to a conclusion. I didn't have enough sense to bring all that stuff together and come out with a sensible conclusion, and so, but I kept listening, watching. Well, listening to him. Back then we didn't have TV. But John's not doing that to us. John is giving us a climax. He's telling us all of the glory and the righteousness that will be experienced by God's people here in chapters 21 and 22. So, if I can just get through the early chapters where God's doing all these damaging things to the evil and to the Satan, and the battle of Armageddon goes on, and soon the old devil is defeated.
And as you said before, Armageddon's already been.
Yeah.
Well,
it's already been. Now, that brings us to the emphasis in chapter 21, and that is the heavenly city. I don't know whether you realize it or not, but the heavenly city here in this chapter is heaven. Yeah, that's heaven. You ever been to that kind of a city? This is an unusual city. Now, I read from Revelation ever since I was a boy. But I never really sat down until a few years ago and analyzed this section of Revelation in John's description of the heavenly city. And it's amazing what you come out with. And I want to do that now in the last half of our lesson tonight. So let's turn to chapter 21, if we haven't already, and let's identify the characteristics that make up the heavenly city that John is describing. Now, I've got 10 slots down here where you can put in answers, and I'll help you put those answers in as we move along. Chapter 21, beginning with verse 1. Now, if I don't stop and you think I should, because one characteristic is mentioned, and I'm skipping over it, say, wait a minute here. You missed one. So don't be afraid to do that. I'll not ignore you. I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no more sea. Then John saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. Characteristic number one, the holy city is as beautiful as a bride who is adorned for her husband. That's what I would put in the first slot. This thing sounds worse than the thunder. Verse 3. And I heard a loud voice out of heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he shall dwell with them, and they shall be his people. And God himself shall be with them and be their God. Number 2. This city will have God dwelling in it.